Good afternoon, everyone. I apologize for starting a few moments behind schedule here. I call the Senate Education Committee to order. It is 3:34 p.m. here on Wednesday, April 12th. We are in the Belts Committee room in the State Capitol Building in Juneau. I'm going to ask folks to ensure that their cell phones are, in fact, on mute. Joining me today is Senator Keel, President Stevens, Senator Gray Jackson, I believe Senator Bjorkman will be joining us here shortly, and myself, Senator Tobin. Please let the record reflect that we have a quorum to conduct business. Thanks again to the wonderful and lovely Sydney for holding down today's moderating duties, and the ever wonderful Mary Gwen, also part of Senate records documenting today's meetings. Today's agenda includes the confirmation hearing for the reappointment of James Field to the State Board of Education and Early Development. We will be taking public testimony on this candidate, and we will have the second hearing for Senate Bill 110, sponsored by Senator Shelley Hughes, and we will be taking invited and public testimony. For those who are interested in calling in to provide public testimony on both agenda items, please call in Anchorage 907-563-9085, in Juneau 907-586-9085. All other locales, please dial this toll-free number that is 1-844-586-9085. As always, you can submit your public comments to senate.education@akleg.gov. Please let the record reflect that Senator Bjorkman joined us at 3:35 p.m. As always, all the materials for today's meeting are available on BASIS or in the smorgasbord that is the plethora of paper on the table by the door. Our first item of business today is the confirmation hearing for the reappointment of James Field to the State Board of Education and Early Development. Committee members should have received a copy of Mr. Field's resume. Printed copies are, again, available by the door. Thank you, Mr. Fields, for joining us today via Microsoft Teams. If you would like to make an opening statement, please ensure that you put yourself on the record. Can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Perfect. We can hear you. Please identify yourself for the record and begin your comments when you are ready.
Okay, great. Thank you. For the record, my name is James Fields. I'm currently on the Board of Education, but this is for reappointment. So opening comments is just a little bit, and you probably have it on my resume. I live in Glen Allen, Alaska, part of the Copper River School District. Was on the local board there for 12 years, the Copper River School District. I've been on the state board for 10 years, was appointed by Governor Parnell, was reappointed by Governor Walker, and then reappointed again by Governor Dunleavy. I've got six children ranging from 25 to 10. All have gone through the public school system here in the Copper River Valley, and that's probably about all my opening statements.
Thank you, Mr. Fields. Questions from the committee members? Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Fields, for your willingness to get reappointed to the board. So, as you mentioned, you've been a member of the State Board of Education Early Development for 10 years, and you were chair for seven. So under your leadership, has the State Board been achieving its mission, which is to provide an excellent education for every student every day?
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, good question, and that's a difficult one in education. I think have we reached it? No, I don't think we've reached it. Is it always a goal? Yes, that's a goal. That's exactly why I've re-upped, is just to try to reach that goal, especially with, I think we're getting there with the Reads Act and some of the, reading initiatives through the department. I think also tribal compacting is a big part of it. Both of those legislation pieces that went through last year, I think can definitely get us there. Trying to create culturally relevant education is always a trick, but I think that tribal compacting piece definitely leads us in the right direction and gets us on a path, potentially.
May I follow up, Madam Chair?
Follow up.
Thank you. So, Mr. Fields, can you please elaborate on two or three of the barriers to achieving this mission and how, if confirmed, you intend to remove those barriers during your next term?
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, well, I think some of those barriers I just talked about, I think reading is a big one as an excellent education every day. And I think culturally relevant education in a state like ours is extremely critical. So I think we're getting to those barriers. It's just a matter of putting them in place and implementing them.
May I follow up one last time, Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, again, thank you, Mr. Fields, but I'd like to just give you an opportunity to share some of the successes that you've achieved during the past decade on the board, and what are a few of your greatest achievements in this role?
Through the chair, Senator Gray Jackson, I think for me, it has to do with how the department is viewed, the Department of Education. When I first came on, it was definitely viewed more as a compliance type organization where they were there to make sure that, you know, teachers had their certifications, make sure that the districts were complying with all the state regulations and statutes. And on my time on the board, it's shifted quite a bit from that compliance piece to a resource, to a service, to more of a serving organization. Obviously, that compliance piece is always going to be there, but definitely more outreach in the way of with the other organizations, whether it's the Superintendent's Association or AASB, the School Boards Association, creating those partnerships and becoming a resource for districts a lot more than just being thought of as a compliance department.
Thank you. And again, Mr. Fields, thank you for your willingness to continue to serve. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Additional questions from committee members. President Stevens.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank you, James. We've worked together for the entire time on the State School Board. You were key in the Alaska Education Challenge and also in the tribal schools. You know, we set programs in motion here through the legislature, but the hard work is getting them through the school board and getting them accomplished. So I just want to thank you because it's been a pleasure to work with you over the years. Thanks, James.
Thank you.
Thank you, President Stevens. Additional questions from committee members. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Fields, as chair of a Article, I think, 3, Section 26 board, you head up the head of the department. The board is charged with hiring the commissioner. And I believe we're rapidly approaching the 10-month mark since Commissioner Johnson notified the board that he would be leaving. Can you talk to us about that fairly extraordinary length of time without having a commissioner?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, we obviously as the board members we've talked about this, but as chair and talking to the board members, we were tasked, and I've mentioned it before, the Reads Act, the Reading Initiative, and I was also tribal compacting, two large issues that really set the course for a lot of the department's work, because those time frames are both pretty tight in the way of implementing them. And so putting a lot of resources, trying to get a commission up to speed, to be honest, and me and the other board members weren't really in a big rush to get a commissioner. And talking with other stakeholders, they thought that was wise just to take our time and try to find the right person and really make sure the department can focus on implementing the Reads Act initiative and tribal compacting. So now that some of those are getting closer to the end, that's ramping back up. Obviously, we did have a candidate that we picked and then backed out. We have a great acting commissioner. She knows the department well, knows the players, does well in the legislature. So at this point, we're comfortable with acting commissioner Teschner in that role. But yes, it is something that is on our radar. It just didn't take a huge priority compared to some of the other initiatives.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Additional questions from committee members? Well, sir, Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Fields, thank you for joining us today at Senate Education. I'm wondering, as we kind of have lots of different boards going through different processes throughout our state government and how they assist their departments and provide oversight, certainly good, healthy discussion is important to the work of any effective board and how they represent the diverse needs of all Alaskans and many experiences that we have across this state. How does the state school board handle dissenting voices on your board? And do you feel that there is an opportunity for people to feel comfortable in their dissent with the direction that the board wishes to go when they take a position?
Through the chair, Senator Bjorkman, if I'm understanding your question correctly, are you asking how the board deals with dissent, or how are you, I'm trying to figure out how to answer your question best.
Chair Fields, is the state school board a place where people are comfortable to speak freely about differences of opinion that they might have on issues that come before your board?
Okay, through the chair, Senator Bjorkman, I would hope so. I would hope that they'd be comfortable speaking their minds. I think public comment wise, they have been in the past. So I would hope that we would be open to that and listen.
Thank you for that answer. Follow up, Madam Chair?
Follow up, Senator Bjorkman.
Are there instances in the past where people have spoken out on issues and then have been called into question for questioning the direction of the majority of the board?
Through the chair, Senator Bjorkman, I'm trying to think of an instance where that possibly could have happened in the past, yes.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Fields, I do have a question that's a follow-up on this, as I think trust is really critical and important to the public process. And, you know, obviously there has been some recent events that have happened at the state board that leaves me with great concern and pause about your leadership, particularly. I think a chief principle of government is an open and inclusive public process. It's essential to good decision-making. It's essential to the trust that we hold so dear. And I'm very concerned about the public process, the trust, and dissenting voices with the recent passage of Resolution 02-2023. So my question to you is, can you explain the general process that is used to notify the public of State Board of Education meetings? What is the public notice process for meeting agendas? And I'm curious to know your thoughts about how the State Board of Education follows open meeting acts.
Chair Tobin, good question. Talked to some media about this, obviously, as well. But it's everything's noticed. I think we have 2 weeks. We got to get it out 2 weeks prior to our meeting. Normal Open Meetings Act notices. The resolution you're referring to is specific to a board member that actually reached out to me and said that they wanted to move this forward. And I basically said, you need to contact our legal and make sure that there's a, you know, if you're going to do that, you need a certain amount of votes to get the amendment, the agenda added and moved. And so that's the process they went through. And based on my talks with our legal counsel, everything was done legally. Does it happen often? No. I mean, go back and look at our agenda minutes and see how many times agendas are amended. It does not, this is not a normal occurrence. Do I have to honor the board members' wishes? Well, that's up to the other board members to vote that in, and that's what happened. If you want to question that against my leadership, that's obviously your prerogative to do, but by no means is there a consistent pattern of agendas changing on the fly. So in some person's view, may not be able to give public comment. That isn't the case if you look at the history.
I do appreciate that. I did look under the bylaws that the State Board adopted in 2018, and you were directly responsible for collaborating with the Commissioner on the agenda and dispersing agenda items as appropriate, and particularly for ones of this nature that we are seeing the current fallout. There is no statutory authority that has been provided to set such type of resolution forward, nor to direct another organization to violate their own values of integrity, respect, perseverance, leadership, teamwork, and most importantly, inclusivity. I am very concerned about this. So my question to you is, looking at your resume, knowing your long tenure as a board chair of your locally elected school board, Do you still believe in local control of education? Do you think that a locally elected school board members are acting in the best interest of our students? And why would you direct another state organization to supersede that local control?
Chair Tobin, and this is only my personal opinion because I'm one board member, and it's a resolution. I think it's something where I think we had a state board member come forward because they thought it was important for safety for all of the students of Alaska that we come out and say something based on the current science that's out there, based on the current information that's out there about what's safe, what's competitive, and what's fair. And I think that's what they brought forward. I don't want to speak for that board member, but I think that's what their thoughts were based on their testimony. And at this point, based on the science where we're at, that it, the board felt as though there was a resolution that needed to be passed.
I thank you for that. What medical professionals or mental health professionals were in the room as you were discussing this particular resolution?
Chair Tobin, there weren't any, and I don't necessarily, I mean, it's a resolution. A resolution that has no regulation tied to it, has no policy tied to it. It basically gives a statement of support. That's it. Obviously, if there was regulation or policy, there is a time of public comment, there would be a lot more put into it. And I think that's and you're referring to ASA, the Activities Association of Alaska, and that would be the area that basically drives all sorts of classifications, which they do already. There already is 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A, for instance, in basketball, for competitive classifications, and there is no difference. So what I'm saying is, based on the science, not necessarily having a doctor in the room, I can, you know, the board member can go find the science and find the journals and find the information. Doctor in the room isn't necessary to find that information, and that's what they did, and that's what we voted a resolution on.
Oh, well, I thank you for that. I would challenge your science, as there's many research and peer-reviewed literature that indicates that many of the transgender competitive sports policies are not evidence-based. They're not based in science. The last piece, I would say that the resolution does have a significant impact. ASAA is currently proposing bylaws change that will prevent particular students from participating in athletics, in direct violation of their proposed values and their motto, Win for Life. It is deeply troubling to me. It's deeply troubling for me to watch an organization supersede the authority not only of local school boards, but also of the policymakers, those in this room, by not allowing us to know what was coming forth and not having the opportunity to provide statutory authority. So I have deep concerns, particularly when we are facing high rates of suicide, of self-harm, and we know that those are more concentrated in our students who are non-binary and trans. And I am deeply troubled by that. So with that, I'm going to ask if there's any additional questions from committee members before we open it up for public testimony. Seeing none, we will open up this candidate for public testimony. Public testimony is now open. Is there anyone in the room who wishes to testify? Seeing none, we're going to look online. Seeing none that are online, we're going to close public testimony. Any final comments for committee members? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to just comment. Early in my career, I staffed the State Board of Education and Early Development. Among my duties were the public notices, both of meetings and of regulations. And while they're treated differently, somewhat differently legally, the spirit of the Open Meetings Act is clear. There were two different chairs during my time staffing that board, and I can't tell you how deeply troubled I am by the response from the nominee, who apparently had sufficient advance notice to consult with lawyers about whether a resolution could be added without any public notice whatsoever, but didn't have enough time to provide any public notice whatsoever. That flies in the face not only of the board's bylaws, but of the spirit of the Open Meetings Act, which is grounded in a notion that Alaskans decide what our government stands for and have the right to tell our government. It's not for our government to say what Alaskans are allowed to know about what their government plans to do. It's any proposal to to bring something without public notice when I worked there would have been ruled out of order by both chairs in the blink of an eye. So, Madam Chair, thanks for the opportunity to make that comment.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Senator Stevens, may I have a motion, please? President Stevens.
The Senate Education Committee has reviewed the qualifications of the governor's appointee to the Board of Education and Early Development and recommends that the following name be forwarded to a joint session for consideration, James Fields. This does not reflect the intent of any of the members of the Senate Education Committee to vote for or against this individual during any further sessions for the purpose of confirmation.
Thank you. The name of James Field will be forwarded to the joint session of the Alaska State Legislature. We will take a brief at ease as we flip around some things and sign the committee report. And we're back on the record here in Senate Education. We are in the Belts Committee Room. And we are now taking up the second hearing for Senate Bill 110, School and University Employee Health Insurance. Senator Hughes and her staffer, Ms. Gonzalez, are here. If you would like to make some brief opening comments, please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you're ready.
Thank you, Chair Tobin. I am Shelley Hughes, Senate District M, and delighted to be back before all of you on the Senate Education Committee. And with me is Gabby Gonzalez. And I failed to mention in the first hearing you were gracious enough to hold that Gabby is an intern. It was her very first presentation. And I think she did a very fine job. And so I just wanted to get that on the record. Thank you for bringing this back up and providing a chance for a couple of folks who plan to testify. I do want to note that Superintendent Dr. Bridget Weiss was here last time and hoped to testify. She's not able to be here today. She did sign a letter in support, and we also received a letter from Lon Garrison in support of the bill from the Association of Alaska School Boards. And, and Mayor Rodney Dial of Ketchikan Gateway Borough School District, is that right? He's the mayor, that's right. So I just want to note those because those are not online. So we have a nice broad spectrum across the state in support of a bill. And just as a reminder what it does, it's an option for districts, school districts, if this were to pass, to explore joining the health insurance pool that we enjoy, as state employees enjoy, which is a pretty good plan. And it might be a substantial savings. And as we heard on the record last time, the estimated cost for both the employer and employee portion for the state health insurance plan right now runs about $20,000 a year approximately. And for MATSU, we heard from them that the employer and employee combination for them right now runs between 28,000 and 30,000. So that's an $8,000 to $10,000 difference. So you can see where a district might want to check that out, and we are starting to hear from superintendents that they are interested in having that option.
Well, thank you very much. Is there any questions from committee members before we go over the fiscal notes? Seeing none, I thank you very much. I think our first fiscal note that we'll be taking up is from the Department of Education and Early Development. I believe Mr. Blackwell is here in the room with us, is joining us before his impending departure from the department to provide an analysis of OMB component 2804. Welcome, Mr. Blackwell. If you please identify yourself for the record and walk us through the fiscal note.
Yes, for the record, my name is Ellen Blackwell, School Finance Manager with the department. Yes, the fiscal note we have here for the Department of Education, we have an indeterminate fiscal note. Within the fiscal note, we state that we don't have any idea how many districts would participate in this and what the time frame of that participation would be. Since the bill makes this subject to ratification by the unions that represent teachers and other members of the districts, we're not certain as to when that will happen.
Thank you very much, Mr. Blackwell. Any questions? Seeing none, we will move on to the next fiscal note. I believe Ms. Perman is here in the room with us and will be providing us an analysis of OMB component 730. Thank you, Ms. Perman. If you could please identify yourself for the record and walk us through the fiscal note.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Sarah Perman. I'm the State Relations Manager for the University of Alaska. Before you today, you have a zero fiscal note from the university, and that is because the bill provides the option that the university may opt into this. And we have opted, we have internally said that's not something we would take advantage of. For your awareness, we did a study in 2020. We worked with Department of Retirement and Benefits at the state, the university's benefits team worked with them, and we had a consultant in, and we identified that the switch over to the UA, or sorry, from the UA Choice Health Plan to the Alaska Care Plan would cost the university between $9 and $16 million to implement, and whereas it may reduce our premiums for our health care, it actually would also do away with a $600 wellness rebate that our employees receive every, as well as our current package expands beyond just health care insurance, and so there are other retirement benefits in there that would go away. So.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Perman? Seeing none, we'll move on to the last fiscal note, OMB component 2152. And I believe that is going to be from Ms. Betsy Wood, the Chief Health Administrator of the Division of Retirement and Benefits. Ms. Wood, can you hear us?
I can. Can you hear me?
We can. If you could please identify yourself the record and walk us through the fiscal note.
Sure thing. So for the record, my name is Betsy Wood, and I'm the Chief Health Administrator with the Division of Retirement and Benefits. The fiscal note that you have before you details the anticipated costs that the division expects associated with operationalizing the provisions of the bill. So there may be a fiscal impact to the claim costs for the Alaska Care Employee Plan and program costs. That would be contemplated separately. We would require an actuarial analysis to kind of give a sense of the range of impacts that could occur there. But the fiscal note that you have before you details the changes the division would need to put in place in order to be able to make this work. We would need three permanent employees to come on board to assist with billing and accounts receivable support services. We would have to manage enrollment and eligibility as well as set up systems to manage employee premium and employer contribution payments from participating governmental units and school districts. Today, the Alaska Care Employee Plan is set up for state employees only, so everything occurs within the state system. Under this bill, there would be participants external to the state system, so we would have to make coding changes to our systems, both internally at the division and then with our third-party contracted partners. So some of the costs that you see account for those coding changes that would need to occur. We also, as we develop a regulations package to accompany this bill, we would need support from our contracted actuarial consultants, as well as support from the Department of Law for legal and regulatory reviews. So you see some of those costs in the first fiscal year as well. So that's a brief overview, and I am happy to answer any questions.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Wood, thanks for joining us. Can you help us just a little bit with the assumptions the department used to derive this fiscal note in the, in terms of how many additional covered lives there might be? I mean, I presume if we'll use a silly example, if every school district and every municipality joined, you probably couldn't do it on three people. What did you use in terms of working assumptions?
Probably not with three people if every eligible group joined, but because the bill sets participation as voluntary, we assume that we won't have every group join. I think we've heard from a number of groups who have said that, at first glance, it doesn't appear attractive to them. So I think that the uptake would be a little bit slower and we would be able to do it with three staff. I think a lot of this, I think I'll have to, I can get you the numbers that we used to assume, but I think we were looking at, groups of about maybe 3,000 to 4,000 additional covered lives, but these groups would come in together. So it's really setting up with one new employer or setting up these systems with one group rather than with each individual new enrollee, if that makes sense.
Madam Chair, thanks. That gives an order of magnitude.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Additional questions? Seeing none, thank you so much, Ms. Wood. We now will open it up for invited testifiers. And first on the list, we have Kathy Leary. Ms. Leary, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready.
Yes, thank you. For the record, my name is Kathy Leary. I'm the city administrator for the city of Gustavus. And thank you for inviting me to testify on this bill. We're in support of the bill, since it provides even the smallest of municipalities another option when seeking health care benefits for their employees. At this time, we're only able to offer health insurance for the employee-only category. That's what small community can afford, basically. With a larger pool, it's our hope that we can expand this to employee and spouse or employee and family, and that it might be affordable in order to attract and retain employees, of which we only have 7 and 3 opt out because they have another insurance option that costs way less than what we're able to offer for better plans. An example of retaining employees is that we are losing our clerk, our city clerk of 6 years to an organization with deeper pockets and better benefits, the National Park Service. Her husband's losing his benefits due to a job shift caused her to have to seek employment elsewhere to do what she needed to do for her family. So she didn't leave because she didn't like her job. She left because right now we can only afford to cover our employees and not additional family members. So we're in favor of this, but I'm also requesting that if it's passed, that the ensuing regulations don't preclude small cities such as ours from participation by implementing a minimum threshold. We have that issue currently getting into different pools. We have to have a certain percentage or a certain number of employees who participate in order to qualify. And even though our school district is an REAA and it's not under the city, and I no longer have children in the school, I served on the regional school board for 9 years, from 1995 to 2004. And health insurance premiums were always one of the most costly budget increases that we faced, as well as it being one of the most contentious negotiating issues that we faced when negotiating with teacher unions. As a small population in a geographically large district, the benefits to being included into a larger pool should result in cost savings to our school district as well as our city. And lastly, I just want to say, so when I testified for the House, and I heard some concerns about a fiscal note on the House version on House Bill 21, but it's my view that a few positions that may be required to manage this enrollment type would be a good investment by the state to help untold municipalities and school districts deal with having to regularly negotiate plans with so many insurance companies. As such, I encourage passage of the bill. However, I would like to ask for intent to be included to make sure there's no minimum threshold requirement and hopefully no initiation fees as well. So thank you for your time and for allowing me to testify before you today.
Thank you very much, Ms. Leary. Any questions? Senator Keel.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Ms. Leary, always good to hear from you. Can you give us just a sense of what the city of Gustavus pays? I presume it's commercial insurance now. What you're paying per employee?
It's through APEI, and I believe we're paying something like close to $800 a month. I know that the state plan overall is that much, but our employees pay 20% of the cost of the benefit. But we're hoping with a larger pool that this will be more attainable, and maybe the cost might go down. I know it's a big wish, but we might be able to still cover employee and families, even though it's more expensive. But it would be less than what it would cost now, which would be $28,000 a year.
Follow up, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is that a catastrophic care policy, or is that a policy that meets the health care law standards?
Through the chair, I'm not. I think it meets the health care law. We have few enough employees that we don't have to comply, so we got what we could get through APEI, and there have been some employees who would actually prefer to be given a stipend and buy their own insurance through the ACA because they would qualify for better insurance through the ACA. And they're part-time, 30 hours or less, so they make little enough that they would get a better deal through the ACA, but they can't go through the ACA as long as we have a plan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Ms. Lee.
Sorry, I don't know if that answered your question completely.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Seeing no other questions from committee members, thank you very much, Ms. Leary. Moving on now to Clayton Holland, the superintendent of the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. Mr. Holland, if you could please identify yourself for the record and begin your testimony when you are ready.
All right. Thank you, Chair Tobin. My name is Clayton Holland. I work as the superintendent for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. And I'll just start with saying it's well documented that healthcare costs in Alaska are the highest in the nation at about 5 times the national average. Alaskans spend the most per resident, face the highest insurance premiums, and have seen overall spending growth much faster than the rest of the country. Alaskans have spent more out-of-pocket dollars in healthcare costs than residents in any other states. These costs have progressively eaten into the paychecks of our employees and into the district's overall budget. This has directly impacted the recruitment of new staff and the retention of school staff currently here on the Kenai and also across Alaska. For FY24, the Kenai Peninsula Rural School District has budgeted $22 million for healthcare, This is about 16% of our total general fund budget. It has a significant impact on everything we do at a time when, as we all know, we're already stretched to the very limits. Having the opportunity to join a healthcare plan with a larger pool of employees is important to the Kenai-Pinser Borough School District and from my conversations with other superintendents to all of us here in Alaska. I would like to thank you for considering SB 110 so that all Alaskan school districts have more healthcare options. And I'd also like to thank Senator Shelley Hughes for bringing this forward, as we have also supported HB 21, the sister companion to this, in the House.
Thank you very much, Mr. Holland. Are there any questions? Seeing none, again, thank you very much for your testimony. We'll move on to our final invited testifier, who is Dan Polta, the superintendent of the Deni Borough School District. I apologize, Mr. Polta, if I pronounced your last name incorrectly.
That's okay. My name is Dan Polta. I'm the superintendent of the Denali Borough School District. And Chair Tobin and members of the Senate Education Committee, thank you for your service to the children of our state and for your consideration to open the state health care plan as an option for school districts. I'm speaking to you in support of SB 110 and ask you to pass this important piece of legislation. It's nothing new to anyone on the committee or anybody listening that the expense of providing appropriate health care coverage to teachers and support staff is a driving cost factor for school districts. Denali Borough School District spends approximately 12% of our annual budget to provide health insurance. From that simple figure, you can see how any step to help reduce or control these costs will help us to use our funding for that daily work of instructing our children. Providing robust health insurance is a critical tool in retaining and recruiting high-quality professionals to teach our children. And lowering or at least limiting increases to health insurance costs also directly benefits our employees. Like many districts, teachers in Denali pay a percentage share of the healthcare premium. Lower premiums means that more of an individual teacher's salary stays with them and their family. Passing SB 110 will provide districts another option to consider when shopping for this coverage for our employees. By having more options, the Denali Borough School District can make the most effective and efficient choice of how to use our limited funds. Any action we can take to help control the escalating costs of health insurance while simultaneously providing that needed coverage is action we should take. Thank you again for your time and for your support in passing SB 110.
Thank you very much, Mr. Protola. Any questions? Seeing none, again, thank you very much for providing your testimony. I'm now going to open public testimony on Senate Bill 110. Once again, for those who are in the public, if you would like to call in, those numbers are in Anchorage 907-563-9085. Here in Juneau, please call 907-586-9085. And all other locales, please dial 1-844-586-9085. You can also submit your comments to senate.education@akleg.gov. Does anyone here in the room wish to testify? Seeing no one, we're going to look online. And seeing no one, we're going to close public testimony. And I'm planning to hold Senate Bill 110 till a future meeting. With that, we have concluded the items on the agenda for today. The next Senate Education Committee meeting will be Friday, April 14th, where we will take up SB 99, Financial Literacy Course in Schools, sponsored by Senator Bill Willikowski. And we will also take up Senate Bill 120 to extend the education tax credit, sponsored by your Senate Education Committee. As there is no other business before the committee today, I'm going to adjourn today's meeting at 4:17 p.m.